So welcome back to our podcast, which is featuring Kwesi Smith on the campaign trail. And we are speaking about the challenges we face in the 2024 election. Kwesi, how are you doing today?
I'm well. It's a good day, a nice sunny day here in Arizona. I think that's why a lot of us live here. It's very picturesque, if you will, and the scenery is great and the weather is wonderful for most of the year. Summer's coming, but it's a beautiful day out. Thanks for asking.
That's right. So I figured today we would get a little bit more into who is Kwesi Smith, into your background, into where you grew up, and what led you to where we are today.
I think, you know, that's a big question. I think I'm a normal guy. I don't know if a lot of people would agree with that, but I think I'm just a normal guy. I grew up in, as many refer to, a small town, USA, Blythe, California, a little 4 square miles when I was growing up. I think we had 4 stoplights in town when I was growing up. And so, you know, we didn't have the opportunities, of course, that a lot of big cities had. I often used to tell people Blythe was in the middle of nowhere, but in the middle of everything. And so we had to balance out those perspectives in the middle of nowhere, because it's that little town that you stop in to use the bathroom and go to McDonald's on the way to LA if you're coming from Phoenix, and on the way to Phoenix if you're coming from LA. But albeit in the middle of nowhere, you're in the middle of everything. You had Los Angeles, you know, a few hours to the west, Phoenix a few hours to the east, Las Vegas a few hours to the north, San Diego a few hours, you know, to the south. So, but again, still in the middle of nowhere, but a very small, conservative, rural town. And that's just very humble beginnings, very family oriented. Still to this day, we have a very tight-knit family. I don't know that more than a day or two goes by without me talking to my mother, you know, literally every day on the phone. She actually still lives in Blythe, California, believe it or not, in the same little apartment that we grew up in. I've tried desperately to get mom to move, you know, out here to Phoenix with us. I think it's a matter of time. I'm working on her. I think, you know, once you get up in age, you know, she's 70 above now. And, you know, they get attached to that environment. A lot of her friends and memories and families and stuff are there. But she still lives in that same little apartment right there on Palm Drive. It's one of the things that's amazing, even about the little police department. You know, one of the lieutenants there at the police department, second guy in command, he and I went to the academy together, went to high school with my siblings and whatnot. Even when something bad happens in the neighborhood, you know, mom still gets that door knock. Hey, Miss Smith, making sure you're all right. It's a part of that small town vibe. And so, yeah, but just a regular old guy, you know, if you ask me. You know.
So how do your rural roots sort of shape who you are and how that's sort of translated into your path in life?
Yeah, I think it provides a level of exposure and perspective that's different. I remember my daughter, Carrington, she's actually due to graduate this May 2024 from Ottawa University. Here, they have a new campus here, of course, in Surprise, Arizona, majoring in psychology, minoring in, I'm sorry, I got it backwards, majoring in communications, minoring in psychology. And she cheered all throughout high school, right there at Millennium High School in Goodyear. It's in the district that I'm running in. And I would go to her high school games and stuff. I mean, you know, these basketball games were phenomenal compared to the little high school that I went to. And so I would just be enamored by the Tigers marching band, you know, and whatnot there at the school. And they have, of course, a great athletics program. Their basketball team, I think, is number 10 in the nation this year at Millennium High School. This is public schools.
Sure.
You know, for all of the folks that like to bash public schools, I mean, this is a public school within our district, one amongst many that are just doing just wonderful. And I remember one year as a part of her cheering competition, she was a cheer captain and whatnot. And she invited me one year to their homecoming parade. It was one of their festivities for their parade. And we went over to Litchfield Park in the park itself, the old town Litchfield. And they did this parade and stuff. And I remember telling her afterwards, I said, Girl, y'all have no idea about how to put on a parade. I mean, it was a nice parade or whatnot, but my mind went back to our homecoming parades there in Blythe that we go to, you know, every year there's a reunion. I mean, you go there and you have reunion classes from, you know, I graduated high school 60 years ago and they're on the floats. And I mean, you know, you think these are floats, but they're nothing more than trailers with hay bales on them and somebody painted a sign and pinned up on the side. I mean, this is as country gets. And again, it's that small town life that gave you interpersonal skills. We didn't have the luxury of having fallouts with people that went on eternally. You had one grocery store. You were going to see them after a while. We didn't have a Walmart, a Target, and, you know, we had Kmart. That was it. You were going to see them. Chances are that somebody's auntie owned the donut shop that you were going to go into. And so it taught us how to deal with people and deal with circumstances and how to pool resources together. That concept that it really does take a village sometimes to raise people. And I think that's really shaped me into who I am today. It's that small town feel, that interpersonal feel where you really talk with people and you learn to be just a good person, you know, sure, at your core.
So talking about that small town feel, that has led you down a path of being in the military, a former police officer, also in the church, and of course your legal career. And so you are not a career politician, as the phrase goes. And I wonder if you can talk to us about what that actually means for you as a first-time candidate.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not, like I said, or like you said, I should say, I'm not a career politician at all. I think it matters a lot. I'm again, from a personal perspective, people ask me, what do you like? I love music. You know, I play the piano. Anything with black and white keys, I can play, you know, sing a little. And I really love the piano. I think it's really soothing, you know, but I do know play. I learned how to play by ear. I remember in our little apartment growing up, we had a little upright piano and my father used to sit behind the piano. He could play, you know, that's one of the things I remember about my childhood. My father died when I was really, really young. I was 11. And he would sit behind the piano and play things. And I would sit behind it and just play it right behind him because I always had an ear for music. But, you know, I never had to take a formal piano class because I just picked it up by ear. And, you know, you play something, I'll sit there for a minute and I'll, you know, can play it. And so that musical part of it, singing, I grew up singing in the church choir there at the little church that we went to in town. So just, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, I was really eclectic with my music. I tell people all the time, as an African-American young man, I know the lyrics to more country western songs than I do to rap songs any day. You know what I mean? I, you know, blame it all on my roots. I showed up in boots and ruined your black tie affair. You know, that's Garth Brooks, Friends in Low Places. I know the words to Margaritaville and Watermelon Crawl, you know, and then songs like that from the country western music in the 80s. I was an Explorer Scout. Explorer Scouts are similar to the Boy Scouts. It's a kind of branch of the Boy Scouts. And I'd ride around in the patrol cars when I was a youngster, 12, 13 years old. And some of the officers, they weren't listening to Jaquan or Eazy-E or Dr. Dre. They were listening to country western music. And I just fell in love with it. Reba McEntire, and the list goes on. And still love it to this day. I have a great, great playlist in my, you know, car of country western music. But stuff like that, you know, that you grew up with that balance, you know. I was in the store. I was actually dropping my car off to get service the other day, and I heard a guitar drag at the beginning of a song, and I immediately knew it. That's Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine, you know what I mean? You know, it's that balance that you grew up with. So, you know, just normal. I'm not a career politician. My parents weren't politicians. On a personal note, I love to dress. You know what I mean? I look in the mirror every morning. If I like the outfit, I tell myself, the boy can dress. You know what I mean? I love, you know, putting on my suits and clothes, and, you know, shopping is therapy for me. I'm not a career politician. Some people say, where did your aspiration for politics come from? The aspiration came because there is a cry in the nation for leadership. There's a cry in our district for leadership. Never mind policies and parties. Leadership. That's where the gaping hole is, I think, in the nation is for leadership. People that get it. What is it? The people, the needs of the people, and that will espouse to do the right things for the people. And you'll always run into trouble, at least in my opinion, with long-term career politicians. You'll always run into trouble at some point.
Right. So in this election cycle, we face a potential matchup of the current president, Joe Biden, with the former president, Donald Trump. And we have a lot of people around the country who are expressing frustration with that for several reasons, one of which is their age. So I'm wondering if we can have a conversation about term limits, about age of politicians, all of those issues sort of wrapped up into what we're facing right now.
So I can see you're not going to take it easy on me. And so, and these are tough conversations to have, but they're necessary conversations. And they're conversations that are at the core of the American experience, if you will, in this age that we live in. Let me address the term limit issue first, and then I'll, you know, speak to the president and former president and this age thing. And it's just crazy. A voter, an American, never mind, not Democrat, because I'm an American first. You understand? Right. You understand? I'm an American first. And I will always side with America over the Democratic Party. I will side with America over the Republican Party or anybody else. I am an American. And I love this country with everything that's in me. It's been a blessing to me and to my family. Term limits. I've been asked that out on the campaign trail more than once. Will you support term limits? And I always answer with an unequivocal yes. Some would say that are career politicians, well, that's foolish. You're saying that you would limit your ability to have a job. And I understand that. I understand that. I'd be saying that at some point, stuff needs to be shuffled around and folks need to be shuffled out. I believe that at the core, because the generation is about 20 years, you know. You track a generation is about 20 years. About every 20 years or so, you see this revolution and things turn around. I don't think we're doing a favor to the generations to come if we have voices and ideals of an old generation screaming louder than the generation that we are entering. And I think for the sake of furtherance of this democracy, we have to shuffle things around. No one should be allowed to be a Mitch McConnell in Congress forever. And there are other ones too on the Democratic side as well. It's time for somebody's, all right, thank you for your service. It's time for you to go home. For other voices of leadership to rise. I think our politics have the same problem that a lot of issues, at least in the church, have. At least what we refer to, I don't necessarily like the reference, but I think if I say it, you'll understand. At least a reference in the black church, you know, you're too young until you're too old. That's the way it's run. You're too young. Well, how are you 60 years old and still too young? You know, and then all of a sudden you turn 70. Well, now you're too old, you know, to do it. It's I think we're missing the voices of younger people that could really help shape the democracy into the future. And you give them their run of the mill at it. The Constitution has requirements about how old the person should be to run for president and Congress. And I think those things need to be adhered to. I think the guidance that the Constitution, or I should say the mandates that the Constitution give, I think they're very wise. But at some point we have to say, all right, when is it time for another set of thoughts, another set of ideas to further democracy? And I could talk more about that. But with that being said, I would support term limits as a congressman. What that number is, I think that's what's up for debate or discussion. Do I think it should be 2 terms? No, not for a congressman. You run every 2 years. You know what I mean? But do I think it should be, you should be able to run for 20 terms? Well, no, I think that's too much. That would be 40 years. I think it's time, you know, to shuffle in some new, not saying that you have to leave politics, but you need to leave the House and go somewhere else, to the Senate, you know, to a cabinet level officer, so that you don't end up with these people. And let me just say this, because this is what helps prevent people from being bought out by special interest groups. Let me give an example. Like, the biggest threat to the Second Amendment of our Constitution is not the Democrats. The biggest threat to the Second Amendment is the NRA, because they have literally bought a party, whole party. When most Americans, the most, you don't have to take my word for it, go check it for yourself. Most Americans, I'm one of them, I don't want your guns. Not if you're a responsible citizen. Absolutely not. I'm not supporting any legislation that says we're taking everybody's guns. That's silly. That's a constitutional right. I have guns. I don't want you to take mine. I don't want you to take mine. But what we don't want is folks that shouldn't have guns having them. Folks that have documented criminal history, you shouldn't have a gun. Folks that are... have documented mental illness, shouldn't have a gun. And the only way we can find that information out is with background checks. It's not going to come through the telepathy. You have to have a but for a whole organization just to buy out completely a party that resists in touching a gun, I think this is a result of not limiting the terms of people that have been wrongfully influenced through special money interest groups and whatnot. You have to limit it and bring in a new wave of leadership that can lead us forward. And that's just an example of one thing. So absolutely, I would support term limits. Regarding the two presidents that are running, well, the former president and the current president that's running, I'm one of those Americans. I know this is not going to win me any points with some of my Democratic colleagues, but one thing you'll learn about me is I'm not going to sit up here and lie, and I'm just going to tell the truth as I see it, and you'll never have to guess when it comes down to me. I'll tell you what it is. I'm one of those Americans that wish we had different choices on both sides of the issue of the presidential election. I think America, and I think I'm with the majority of Americans. I'm not saying anything is wrong with President Biden, and I'll speak to that in just a minute. But I think me, like a lot of other Americans, wish we didn't have to go through this election again and this process. And we can see what it's bringing about already. A fight that we don't want to go through again. I remember what this felt like 4 years ago. And it was nasty. It didn't feel good. It caused a lot of disinterest. It was so pugilistic, unnecessarily pugilistic. And I think it poisoned the part of our processes. I'm of the opinion that it was coming from one side more than the other. But I think largely America wants a different choice. I wish we had some different choices. But we are where we are, and these are the two candidates. I think there's been a lot of conversation had around President Biden's age. In fact, I was asked, I was out somewhere in the district, and I was asked, would you support an age restriction for running for office, or particularly the presidency? And this is from a Democratic voter. And I had to push back a little bit on it. I said, well, hold on. And this is me being a former federal investigator that had to enforce the ADEA, the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, that says you can't discriminate above people over 40. They're in we call it the PAG, the protected age group. I'm in the PAG, believe it or not. I just look good still, but I'm in the PAG. or at least Tiffany thinks I look good. You have to be careful about discriminating against people specifically based on age. I'm not saying that you can't restrict it at some point, but you have to come up with some other reason besides just age. When someone clearly has the capacity, it can't be age, it has to be capacity. Let me say it another way. Now, my grandparents were able to live up through, they're all passed on now, but up past their 80s. I remember clearly my grandparents, or my grandmothers particularly, they were well about their wits at 80 years old. They were functioning fine. They had the capacity. They paid their own bills. They drove their own car. You know what I mean? Nothing wrong with these folks. I have a mother, a dear, in the black church. Again, I hate the reference, but I'll use it so you understand. But in the black church, once folks get up senior in years, it's particularly the women, we call them church mothers. I'm sure you've heard about it. We call them, these are the mothers of the church. At the San Diego campus of our church, we have this dear sweet mother. Her name is Valita Collins. She's from Ohio. She lives in San Diego. Mother Collins' birthday is in May. She turns 97 years old this year. Mother Valita Collins still drives her little car to church every Sunday. She stands by the back door and ushers better than any usher on the usher board at that church. She hands out candy. She greets people. She is well within her wits. Mother Valita Collins is going to be 97 years old in May. She leads the Zumba class at her 97 years old.
Wow.
Gets around better than some 30 years old at the church. Should she be restricted from her livelihood and servant just because she's 97? No. Why? Because she has the capacity to do it. A lot of people are talking about, well, the president's 80 years old. He's going to be 80 years old when he's elected. Well, let's not overstate things. If President Trump is elected, he'll be 78. This ain't the best of English, but I think you understand it. Ain't much difference between 78 and 80. That's not much different. Does both of these men have the capacity to function as president mentally and physically? Could they both do the job? Absolutely, if we're just talking about capacity. So let's not inflate this age argument to make it look like it's that big of a deal. I'm 40-some years old. Well, I've been telling people I'm 28 plus shipping and handling.
That's right.
Every now and then, I misplace a word, misstate a name, forget something mid-sentence. And I'm only 28 plus shipping and handling. These men are over 70. President Trump, 77. President Biden, 80 years old. Of course. But let's be respectful to age and see, for both of these men. It's not a matter of age. So let's not conflate that argument so that we have talking points. It's disrespectful to our seniors who have paved the way for us. Both of them in some way has. You don't have to like Donald Trump. He's been the president of the United States, and he deserves at least that respect that he's held the office. So if it's not a matter of age specifically, it's a matter of capacity, then after we determine that they have the capacity, which I believe both of them do, now we look to character. And that's where the problem is for me as a voter.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there, and actually you've segued into character, which I think is necessary to mention as well when we're talking about presidential candidates or frankly any other candidates. I mean, you're running for the 9th district, the 9th congressional district in Arizona, and on the campaign trail there's been a lot of talk about the character of the current congressman. Sure. In this district. So perhaps you'd like to speak to that as far as your sort of definition of character and what that looks like for a politician.
Sure, absolutely. There's a certain character that is essential to leadership, especially leadership in a public space. See, when you have your own company or in billions of dollars and whatnot, doubtless President Trump has, you can act how you want to act in your world. But when you come into public space where it's funded by taxpayer dollars, you may have what you think are some of the best ideals in the world. But Dr. King made this statement: we don't judge people by the color of their skin. We judge them by the contents of their character. What is in you? You will never get me to hear your policies if I can't get past your character. I don't care what party you are from if I can't get past your character. I'm not asking any candidate to be flawless or any political official to be flawless. None of us are. None of us are flawless. But there are certain things that are germane to character that in the public space must not, cannot be excused. Some of the things I've heard President Trump say across the stage, across the podium, at rallies, is stuff that I have seen school administrators write students up for, and they've been suspended from public school.
Sure.
Some of the things I've heard the President Trump say, folks have been expelled from school for. If we'll kick a kid out of school for saying that, we should not in any instance tolerate it in the highest office in the country. And so for me, never mind the policies, never mind the parties. I've voted across party lines before. President Bush's first term, I think I voted for. He was running against Al Gore, I believe it was. I voted for Al Gore. Once the thing shook out and they determined that President Bush won, President Bush had my support. I was in the military at the time. Second time around, when the election came up, we're in the middle of, you know, the Gulf War had, you know, started. It was short. I voted for President Bush, a Democrat. I was a Democrat then. I'm a Democrat now. I voted for the Republican because at that time, I believed that he should have been president. So it's not a spouse to a party. It's character that matters the most. It's character that matters. And for President Trump, and I'm not running for president, so I don't have to spend a whole lot of time, you know, talking about President Trump. I think the people will make up their own mind about that. I know for Congressman Gosar, and I live in the 9th Congressional District of Arizona, 90% of the reason I'm here is because we have a person in office that has a problem with character. Character. Something as recent as a few weeks ago. We need more white people in the military. What does that mean? Are black people not good enough? Are Latinos not good enough? Why do the people... When I was in the Marine Corps, it didn't matter what color you were. Just come serve your country. It's things like that that speaks to a larger narrative of character. And I don't even have to deal with the fact, you know, of how his family feels about him. I think we let that, that's a family issue. But some of the things, there is a list of things that clearly shine the light that there is a character issue. And I think character is on the ballot, what the character of this nation will be, what the character of our district will be. And that's why I firmly believe that's one of the challenges that we face, is that every voter is going to have to go to the poll and make a decision before party, before politics, make a decision about character and what we believe as voters the character of this nation should be. And that's at the top of things that every voter must address in this election.
Sure. So you've touched on a lot of different issues. There's a lot to unpack here, and we will in future episodes. But we're going to wrap this one up shortly. And I just want to go back to what you spoke about in terms of the character of one Paul Gosar and how you present a real contrast to him going head to head. And the slogan for this campaign is a better choice. So why don't we wrap up with why you present a better choice for the voters of the 9th District from Paul Gosar?
One of the things that I've experienced, and it has been such a blessing on one hand, if I could use that term, is how I've been embraced by the majority of Republican voters that I've encountered in the district. because we have different parties, and in some instances, not some instances, we have different positions on the issues. But when they see you're no threat to them, you maybe different skin color, maybe they're supporters of President Trump. I'm not. But if you look past that, we're not much. And the embrace that we need leadership like this, the character of leadership like this, that's what's been such a big blessing to me. It's not always you getting pats on the back from the people that you expect pats on the back from. I'm not judging the success of my campaign about how many Democrats will come stand beside me. They have another reason to stand beside me because we're Democrats. It's the independents. It's the Republicans. When they say, yes, we agree that what you're saying is what's best for the country, regardless of that. And that goes down to character. And I think that is what Paul Gosar, you don't have to take my word for it. Go look at it for yourself. That is what Congressman Gosar is woefully lacking. And the beauty of it is we don't have to live with it. The Republican, the independent, nor the Democrat in that district has to live with that. We don't have to lower the standard, widen the plate, make exceptions to malfeasant character. And we shouldn't if we're trying to preserve a democracy for our children and grandchildren.
So thank you for this session today. And why don't you mention your website so people know where they can go to get more information about your candidacy?
www.QuaceySmithForCongress.com. Quacy is spelled Q-U-A-C-Y, just like it sounds. www.QuaceySmithForCongress.com. There is a whole lot of stuff on there. You can sign the petition if you live in the district. You can make donations. We need all of your donations because, you know, NRA is not going to write me a check. I don't perceive they're going to do that to help run for office. But I promise that you're in good hands, that be accountability with the funds. I'm not going George Santos your money. I'm not doing any of that other stuff. I'm not going to Kyrsten Sinema you and change parties. I'm not doing any of that other stuff. What you see is what you get. It is what it is. And I think this, that kind of transparency, honesty, and leadership that the Republican, the independent, and the Democrat needs. For this election, it is without question that I'm the better choice. Now, if the Republican decides 2 years from now, we got another Republican that we want to go with, somebody else might be the better choice in 2026 election. But for this election, if it's me against Paul Gosar, I'm the better choice. And you can find more information about that, www.QuaceySmithForCongress.com.
Okay. Thank you so much, Quacy.
Thank you.
For this episode. And we will see you all next time. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.